broadcasting live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios.
30 seconds.
And now the act you've all been waiting for.
Now back to the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show.
I am the smartest man alive.
Call Johnny now at 844-5600.
Funny name for a guy.
20 years of sports coverage. This is Nashville's sports original.
Stop what you're doing. And listen,
WNSR 560 on 95.9 FM.
Here's Johnny.
Thunderstick. Thunderstick.
And welcome to our number two, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios, the coldest team in town. Now offering great wages and benefits for drivers to join their winning team. If you would like more information, go to the website, gogandcole.com. Coming up at 5:35, Adam Sparks talking Vanderbilt. He covers the Commodores for the Tennessean. But right now, going back to the hotline, Barrett Salee, columnist with CBSSports.com, also a co-host on SiriusXM College Sports Channel 84. Barrett, hope you're having a good day so far. As always, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
All right, so your assessment, first and foremost, the team that you had pegged to be this year's national champ, it just goes to show you, you got to be ready to go each and every Saturday. And I saw something in South Carolina on Saturday, and I go back to when they played Alabama back in September. You know, instead of, you know, trying for seven every time, if they had settled for field goals, they would have been had an opportunity to be within one score of Alabama in the third quarter of that game. Back in September, I go back to the way this game played out on Saturday. Major props there to Will Muschamp in South Carolina, the way they were able to get this job done on Saturday.
Yeah, they played well. Like you mentioned against Alabama, they had a couple of hiccups, but by and large played well in that game too, and that was Helinski's first SEC start. So, yeah, I mean, South Carolina played well. Their defensive front is very underrated. And so, you know, they got the job done, and got Jake Fromm to make mistakes, some uncharacteristic mistakes, which, you know, obviously, you know, some of those weren't on Jake, the interception in overtime, most specifically, but, yeah, South Carolina is a pretty good football team, and to have, you know, Helinski go out, what was that, midway through the third quarter and have Kerry and Joyner come in. That tells you a lot about the culture and the team that Will Muschamp's built, because they don't quit and they don't, you know, especially that game, variables happen and they dealt with those extremely well. And I think that falls on Muschamp and credit to him for the job he's done.
Another thing that really stands out to me, now you can say, okay, who have they played to this point, but with what Wisconsin has done so far in their first six games, four shutouts. It's the second fewest points ever over the last 40 years by a team in their first six games. Only Florida State, in their national championship year, they allowed only 24 points through their first six. Here's Wisconsin, has allowed only 29 points, four shutouts so far in their six wins. And look, they're going to have some opportunities to prove themselves. You know, you got Ohio State down the road, Penn State as well. But, I mean, the bottom line is Wisconsin in perfect shape right now to accomplish everything that they wanted to before the season started.
Yeah, I don't care who you play. Four shutouts are four shutouts. I mean, that is remarkable. And really, I mean, you could count the Michigan game almost in that category too, because they scored 14 points. But anybody that watched that game knows those are 14 garbage points. So, Wisconsin has put itself in a position where it should not be treated like it was 2 years ago when it was just not a cute little undefeated story. That team right now, with what Jonathan Taylor can do and with the decisions that Jeff – I mean, go back and watch that game. I know the numbers don't bear it out. That offense could have done whatever it wanted to do last week, and they just decided to take their foot off the gas when they did. It's just a masterpiece in terms of what to watch defensively. That's a legit football team. I would love to see that team paired up with one of the SEC's high octane offenses in a bowl game. And luckily for us, because of the way the schedule works out, we are going to get to see them play Ohio State, because I'm fascinated with Wisconsin. I can't wait to see what happens if they do have to score points. What they will try to do. Because I do think there's a lot left in that tank that we haven't seen yet.
It could be a situation. I know that Wisconsin and Ohio State, they will see each other the last Saturday of this month. It could be the first of two meetings because at this point, I don't know if Wisconsin gets tripped up more than once in the stretch run. You know, they have Illinois, then they're at Illinois, at Ohio State, bye week, and then the month of November, they're at home against Iowa, at Nebraska, home against Purdue, and then they'll wrap up the regular season at Minnesota, which, oh, by the way, they're one of the surprise teams. They're 6-0 right now as well. You know, but given the choice of Ohio State's schedule and what they're doing in their division, looking at Wisconsin, I think Wisconsin's certainly in a better position, especially if they can beat Ohio State the end of October, for Wisconsin to be undefeated going into the Big Ten Conference Championship game.
Yeah, if they beat Ohio State, I think they will be. And, you know, they could stumble, obviously. Minnesota's better than people expected. You know, and I think Iowa still has the capability of being dangerous. But, yeah, the schedule sets up really well. I mean, when you have you and I both know, and neither of us are big Michigan folks, but when you draw Michigan and Ohio State out of the Big Ten East, that's a pretty tough Big Ten schedule for a West Division team. They've already got Michigan, you know, out of the way. They look phenomenal. I'm with you. I think they play Ohio State twice this year. It wouldn't surprise me if they found a way to split those games. And depending on when they do, that could mean a whole lot in terms of the college football playoff.
Hey, by the way, I saw this floated out, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and I'm looking at the Big Ten and seeing how this could be implemented there as well. Instead of having divisions, because I look at the Big Ten, and even when they put this together, knowing that the East has Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, and then you compare that to the West, especially since Nebraska on a national scale hasn't been relevant, but you got Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, and then, you know, pick your best of the four, which is not really saying much. It was always, to me, so heavily on the East side, just like we've seen over the last 10-plus years with the SEC West. I'm not opposed to having it. Forget about divisions. You know, go 1-14. Have, you know, three permanent opponents, and then do the round robin as far as every 2 years with the remaining teams.
I'm fine with that. And really, I mean, to think back, that was sort of the philosophy with Legends and Leaders, was to get away from geography in terms of divisions, because geography should not ever determine, you know, if a team's championship worthy or not. So that was the idea behind Legends and Leaders, but they decided to go back to geography anyway when people laughed at them, which the names were silly, the idea wasn't and still isn't, but I'm with you. The, you know, doing away with divisions, as long as you can get a waiver and have a championship game, I don't see what the criticism for that would be. I don't see why anybody would be opposed to that, because like I said, geography does not determine anything other than where you're located on a map. And if you're determining, you know, championship worth based on geography, then you're not really doing your job all that well. So I'm with you. I would love to see that happen. I'd love to see that happen in the SEC. I'd love to see it happen everywhere. I am 100% on board with team no divisions. And, you know, sometimes that could hurt you. I think in the Big 12, that will happen at some point. Hasn't happened, you know, yet, but that doesn't matter. If I want conference championship weekend to matter, I want it to matter because of the two best teams, not, you know, teams that are pretty good but might not be great just because they win a geographically determined division.
I mean, I look at, you know, good example, two games in the SEC on Saturday. You had Tennessee with Mississippi State. You had Kentucky with Arkansas. I mean, think about it. You could be born today, and between now and you graduating high school, you may, depending on, especially if that team came to your house last year, for example, you may only see one of the SEC teams, for example, a Mississippi State if you're Tennessee, only once before you graduate high school if you were born today. There's something wrong with the system when we have it like this.
No doubt. I mean, and look what happened 2 weeks ago, Auburn and Florida. A, it was a great game, obviously, with national ramifications. But B, I'm 39 years old. I went to Auburn. I know how much that game meant to people. Like, that was a huge rivalry, an absolutely enormous rivalry. And, you know, to see it only played, you know, once every 10 years or 7 years, whatever the rotation is, that sucks. I mean, it really does suck because, you know, these players need to feel intensity like that. These players need to have games against teams that they're not familiar with. That's what we crave. We don't want to see the same stuff over and over again. I want to see, if I was in charge of everything, I would 100% do away with divisions and just have two permanent teams or three permanent teams or whatever and rotate everybody else. Everybody be happy. You get an actual champion, and all would be well. I don't see why that's so hard.
And I'll give you an example of what we're talking about. If, like I said, if that team had come last year, you'll see them only once between now and when you graduate high school, compared to making the change, have three permanent opponents, and then the other 10 teams, for example, in the SEC, they're not of your three permanent opponents. You'll see that team twice in a four-year period of time, once on the road, once at home, every 4 years. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with this? Nothing.
There's nothing. Well, my son right now is 8. He's going to watch Auburn play Florida one time before he gets to college.
There you go.
That's stupid.
Yep. All right, so tell me, who's the number one team in the country right now based on what you've seen so far through the first six contests, through the first 7 weeks?
I've got Alabama. I think you sort of just take them for granted right now, and that's not fair, and that's not the way it should be. That is a really good football team that has taken its foot off the gas consistently, that had a really good defensive performance on Saturday, where it got to the quarterback 5 times. They had 10 sacks coming into this game total. So you combine that with what they're able to do offensively, an offensive line that's really, really good and has gotten better throughout the course of the season, and, you know, the best receiving core in the country. Let's not try to outthink the room. It's Alabama. No, they haven't been perfect, but, yes, they are viewed at a different standard than everybody else. So, Ohio State's complete. They look awesome. LSU looks great too. The defense might not be as good as it needs as it has been, but they're still great. Oklahoma played some defense last week, which is great to see. But, you know, Alabama is Alabama, and I think a lot of the criticism of the Tide, specifically on the defensive side, is a little bit misguided. They gave up some points and some yards in garbage time, maybe too many for Nick Saban that he would like. But they play great defense. They fixed the problem last week. I think it's basically fixed from here on out. I just don't see why Alabama is not number one in everybody's ballot.
By the way, the team that I don't know how many folks had them to be number one in the SEC East right now, they're by themselves. Missouri.
Missouri.
Everybody else looking up. And here's the thing. Missouri, when you look at their schedule, all they have to do is find a way to get by either Georgia or Florida on November 9th or 16th. And I think it will be Missouri playing for the SEC title come December.
Yeah.
They don't have to win both.
They don't have to win both. They have to win one. You're right. And they certainly are capable of winning one of those, especially, I mean, because neither of those teams are reliable, in my opinion. I mean, I think they're good. But after what we saw from Georgia, you know, Georgia's not reliable. And so, that's a realistic possibility, which is not something I expected when they lost to Wyoming earlier this year.
When I was asked the question back in July, take Alabama, Georgia, or take the field, I went the field only because I just felt like the East was going to be the issue because of Missouri's easy schedule, knowing they get Ole Miss and Arkansas from the West, and knowing how tough Georgia's two opponents from the West and Florida's same situation. I just felt like Missouri was going to find a way to get in through the back door because of the easy two games in the West.
Yep, I agree. I didn't necessarily agree with Missouri, but I looked at that schedule and we talked about it. You know, Missouri at this, we thought they'd beat Wyoming, but aside from that, you could sit there and say, okay, by November, they're going to be undefeated and we'll have no idea if they're good or not. And that's the way the schedule has worked out. And I still think that sort of philosophy and mindset still exists. I think they're pretty good. You probably think they're good too. Others might disagree. But whether we agree or disagree, they're still going to be in it because of the way the schedule works out.
When Oregon lost to Auburn back during Labor Day weekend, I thought, watch out for Oregon, because I really felt like they were going to run the table the rest of the way, win the Pac-12 conference title game and all that. But the problem, and you can see it especially when we start getting the weekly poll from the College Football Playoff Committee, that even with wins each and every Saturday, they're not beating anybody ahead of them. Everybody will be below them at best and usually not ranked at all. Whereas when, you know, each and every week we look at Alabama, who they still have remaining. And the same thing, you just keep going down the list. And that's the problem when Oregon is your bell cow there and everybody else is looking up to you.
Yeah, especially considering, well, but the thing is Oregon has been complete. I mean, you go back and watch their defense. Their defense hasn't given up double digits this year outside of Auburn. And so that's a problem when you can't tout Oregon as being a good team and yet everything that they've done suggests that they are. Then that's a problem with the conference. But I think Oregon's going to be all right. I think they're going to run the table. And if the chips fall the way that you don't need a lot of dominoes to fall if you're Oregon, even though the conference power is not doing you any favors, you don't necessarily need a whole lot to break your way to make the playoff if you went out, especially the way they've been playing lately.
How many teams do you have unbeaten through their 12 games this year? And not necessarily who they are, because it could come down to either Alabama, LSU, or Ohio State, Wisconsin, one or the other. How many do you feel like is going to be able to run the table at this point?
I mean, everyone would say four, right? I'm sorry, three. That would be the obvious answer that everybody says. The winner of Alabama, LSU, and then Clemson, and then Oklahoma or Ohio State. So you could easily say four. That's not how college football works.
Nope. Clemson will find a way to mess it up somewhere down the road where they start flirting with disaster again when they're favored by three touchdowns. But
we had three undefeated teams in the playoff last year, and that was the anomaly.
Right.
Right? So I know those are probably the best teams in the country. If I had to guess right now, if any of those fall, I would say you're going to probably have two undefeateds. I think you're going to have – if I had to guess which two lose, I would guess Clemson, and I would guess Oklahoma with Alabama/LSU and then Ohio State both being undefeated.
As long as Auburn plays well on the road against Arkansas this Saturday after the bye week, I still like my prediction back in July where I have Auburn, and it's a combination of two things here. The fact that LSU has to play Florida, then travel to Mississippi State before they get Auburn at home to wrap up this month. And for Auburn, to me, I think they, as long as they play like something similar we saw against Mississippi State, for example, I still like Auburn's chances to go into Baton Rouge and beat LSU.
I don't think they can run the football effectively, especially without Booby Whitlow. And I don't think their offensive line's all that great. And I don't think that Gus Malzahn has called plays in the way that would that has benefited Bo Nix. So. I think defensively they can certainly challenge LSU, but we saw what LSU's defense did to a really good Florida defense last week. And if that's any indication of the kind of game that it would be against Auburn, Auburn's got no shot.
By the way, Florida, I look at that game on Saturday night against LSU. They actually led 28-21 in that game. The difference, of losing by 14 or being tied going into overtime is the fact that two series, Florida inside the red zone, one deep at the end where it's turnover on downs, but the one before that, the key interception there, and that's the difference. That's the difference between a overtime thriller and LSU, winning, going away with the 14-point lead.
Well, I agree to a point. I think the biggest turn came, though, when they put Emory Jones, when Dan Mullen tried to outthink the room and put Emory Jones in for a full drive. After LSU had tied it up.
Yeah, what are you doing there? What is he doing there in that situation?
Dan Mullen is an offensive genius, which is his greatest asset, but Dan Mullen knows that Dan Mullen is an offensive genius, which is also his greatest fault.
And if you don't believe us, just ask him, right?
Yeah, Dan Mullen.
Yeah. All right, so look, this is that month where we – and by the way, I saw an interesting stat, and it still holds true. I didn't get a chance to get to it on my Saturday Countdown to Kickoff tailgate show. But the two teams in the month of October over the last 3 years, they're unbeaten. There's only two Power 5 conference teams. One is the easy answer, and that being, of course, Alabama. But the other one, Iowa State. Iowa State, with their win on Saturday, they're now 9-0 in the month of October over the last 3 years. Alabama now 7-0 after their win against A&M. The only two unbeaten teams in the month of October as far as from Power 5 conferences.
You could have given me 20, 25 different guesses, and I would have never landed on that.
I never would have come up with Iowa State. I never would have come up with Iowa State, honestly. When I saw that, I thought, that's just too good. And that's when I was, like, pulling for Iowa State to win on Saturday so it would still be relevant.
There you go. Good, and good for Matt Campbell. That's a huge compliment to him.
Hey, as always, we appreciate you, kind sir. Before we let you go, I'll remind the listeners again the different ways to keep up with your coverage.
Follow me on Twitter at Barrett Salee, Instagram at Barrett underscore Salee. Download the CBS Sports app, watch CBS Sports HQ, and listen on SiriusXM.
You're a scholar and a gentleman. Be safe. Good wishes and best wishes to your family, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you. Barrett Salee once again joining us. Still coming up this hour, a little bit later on, we have an open segment. If you'd like to be a part of the show, 615-844-5600. But coming up before 6 o'clock, we'll have a chance to talk with Adam Sparks with the Tennessean, to talk some Vanderbilt with him. And then just after 6, we'll rehash Week 6 of the NFL with Alan Bell with CBS Sportsline, leading up to Monday Night Football tonight, 6:30 as far as pregame. We kick off at 7:15, Green Bay playing host to the Detroit Lions right here on Nashville Sports Radio.
Good afternoon. An accident with injuries being reported on Briley Parkway at Glastonbury. Traffic's already busy in that area over near the airport. Traffic also has picked up 65 south here at make your way past Concord Road down into Williamson County. Heavy, but it's moving back towards Murfreesboro, Rutherford County on 24 going east out past Bell Road. Celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest now through October 28th. Check it out, obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
The award-winning Bob's Steak and Chop House, located in the Omni Nashville Hotel, is a nationally renowned steakhouse specializing in the finest corn-fed Midwestern prime beef. The menu formula is simple: incredible meat, gigantic shrimp, fabulous salads, and decadent desserts. Classic steakhouse food prepared and presented in a manner that Bon Appetit calls the kind of fare you'll want to go back for again and again. And voted one of the top 50 restaurants in the country by Travel and Leisure magazine, the most romantic steakhouse in Nashville, and won the Wine Spectator Award for the second consecutive year, and one of only 11 steakhouses in America that serves A5 Wagyu steak. For reservations, call 615-761-3707. That's 615-761-3707. Bob's Steak and Chop House, where complimentary valet parking is always available.
This football season, your friends at Pickers Vodka are proud to introduce Pickers Unplugged, ready-to-drink canned cocktails, real vodka soda, no strings attached, zero carbs, zero sugar, and only 96 calories. Pickers Unplugged is available in 4 refreshing flavors, but because it's made with real vodka and not malt liquor, you can only buy it at your local liquor store here in Tennessee. To learn more and to stay plugged in, visit PickersVodka.com or stop by the distillery in the Nations and take a tour.
I want you to listen to what is a very important message from my friends at Shield Law Group and my buddy Bill Kalutis. Your credit report is really important. What if you've been the victim of identity theft, or you have an item on your credit that doesn't even belong to you, or you've been turned down for a mortgage, credit card, car loan, rental housing, job, or insurance? Okay, you get the picture. The credit report is vital. You need it to be the very best it can be. And for a lot of us, we don't even know what our score is. So that's why I bring on ShieldLawGroup.com, my friend Bill Kalutis, and his phone number, 615-742-8020. You know what? It might be the most important phone call you make all day. ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis.
Westwood One is your exclusive home for Monday Night Football. Hi, this is Kurt Warner. Join our crew all season long for the NFL's best rivalries and top players. The Patriots, Chiefs, Browns, Saints, Rams, and more, all featured on Monday Night Football. Tune in for all the action. If it's Monday Night Football, it's right here.
Live on WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio. Take Johnny Ballpark Franks on the go by downloading the WNSR app. Search your app store for Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios. 615-844-5600 if you'd like to be a part of the show. Football season means a lot of tailgating, parties, viewing parties, and more. Here's the thing, if you're planning on drinking, then have a plan. Call a friend, call a cab, have a designated driver. But drunk you makes bad decisions, so make a plan before you party. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. Our good buddy Mark Benda, Senior Program Director over at News Channel 5J, with our weekly list of the top five TV sporting events in Nashville last week from Monday the 7th to yesterday the 13th. The first four on the list, all NFL games, starting with the fact that the Titans-Broncos yesterday afternoon drew a 24.6. So roughly, we're talking about, 246,000 TV homes, somewhere in that vicinity as far as watching yesterday. 250,000 TV homes. Number two was the Texans and Chiefs contest, a 12.3. Steelers and Chargers last night, a 10.3. And number four on the list was Thursday night's game between the New York Giants and the New England Patriots, drew a 9.4. The top-rated college game came in at number five, and that was Saturday night with the Florida Gators taking on LSU on ESPN, a 9.0. As far as Tennessee-Mississippi State, early in the day on Saturday, drew a 5.7. So, you know, I'm looking at Vanderbilt, and I'm thinking, okay, so not, you know, although they announced 20,000 or whatever it was, there was maybe 6,000 folks in the stadium. So that must have meant that people were watching the game at home, right? 13th on the list, 2.6.
Mm.
Yeah, that's not good.
Mm.
Yeah, we're talking about
20,000.
Yeah, 26,000 homes. 26,000 for Vandy and UNLV. Mm. So that's the list. You know, the fact that there's, and you wonder how many folks checked out in the second half, by the way, of the Titans-Broncos. Once again, earlier today, Mike Vrabel, no decision yet, maybe tonight, first thing in the morning, as far as who's starting for the Titans, as far as the game coming up on Sunday against the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah.
As he said, San Diego, but
I didn't know if you noticed it or not.
I know, I caught it. Because, you know, it still slips out from my standpoint, too. I'm still sometimes, it just doesn't seem, well, put it this way.
Doesn't seem right.
Los Angeles doesn't really understand the Chargers that are there either, since they there's more support for, like, yesterday with Pittsburgh compared to the Chargers, so... there's a bunch of folks there from the sports world still trying to figure that out. What about the Predators? Saturday afternoon, it was a day game out in L.A. They go out and lose to the L.A. Kings, 7-4. And so they'll march on again coming up tomorrow night, taking on the Golden Knights.
Yep.
So get a chance to continue their ways there. By the way, don't forget Prednik Nation Radio tomorrow morning, 5 to 6. Crazy Charlie Sonnier and his guests will be talking Predators with the next edition of Prednik Nation Radio. Coming up on the other side, a chance to talk some Vanderbilt with Adam Sparks. He covers the Commodores for the Tennessee, and we'll get his thoughts about Saturday and also looking ahead as far as what remains on the schedule for Vanderbilt, Derek Mason, and more. That's coming your way next, right here on Nashville Sports Radio.
Well, good afternoon. Still quite a bit of traffic flow now making its way south of town back down through Williamson County. A crash 1200 block of Gallatin Pike in Madison. Spence Lane at Murfreesboro Pike was tied up at that intersection just a few minutes ago on that crash. Still moving, however, on 40 East out past the airport. All that traffic headed back out to Wilson County. Hey, celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest now through October 28. Check it out at obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
By now, most of you have figured out James Warren and I went to BGA, class of 1977. He's the owner of Sir Speedy and Barry Hill, and he joins us by phone. James, let's talk a little printing services.
Well, I've been in business for a long time, and I've known that there's all kinds of challenges that everybody has every day. And I will say, now, printing doesn't have to be one of them. You can rely on the pros at Sir Speedy Barry Hill to provide you with print solutions to achieve your goals. Whether you need posters, banners, brochures, catalogs, personalized mailers, copying, you name it, we're here to make you look good. to move printing off your plate and onto ours.
Give me the particulars.
You can reach us at 615-832-9511. You can visit us online at SirSpeedyMusicCity.com or email us at print@SirSpeedyMusic.com. We've got you.
Were you scammed into signing a timeshare contract? And did you miss the part that said you have to pay for your great idea? Not only for the rest of your life, but when you're not here anymore, you get to pass this turkey onto your family for them to pay for the rest of their lives. Thanks, Dad. Don't burden your family down the road, and don't be stuck with expensive timeshare payments forever. Get out of your bad idea timeshare contract guaranteed or pay nothing. Call Resort Release today and learn for free how their timeshare exit team can help you legally exit your timeshare contract. They've helped thousands of people and they're A-plus rated with a BBB. So if you feel scammed, get mad and get out of your expensive timeshare contract right now, guaranteed. Call NOW.
800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. That's 800-898-0816.
Innsworth is a kindergarten through 12th grade coeducational independent school located on two campuses in Nashville, Tennessee. The school incorporates a nurturing community with a challenging program to create a unique, joyful environment where students can develop the intellectual agility, self-confidence, and discipline they need to excel. Visit our website at innsworth.com to learn more.
Exclusive Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR SkyCan Forecast. A perfect fall day. Today is going to be sunny with a high 75. Tonight, mostly clear with a low getting down to 50. For Tuesday, a mix of sun and clouds with a high 78. And for Wednesday, sunshine all day with a high 62. Utilizing the resources of the WeatherBug Network on Nashville Sports Radio, I'm WNSR's Shannon Holly.
Sports Radio, WNSR.
This is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show, every weekday afternoon on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Frank's with you, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios. This segment brought to you by friends with Strike and Spare Family Entertainment. Don't forget, at 6:30 tonight, pregame with kickoff just after 7:15. Monday Night Football, wrapping up Week 6 of the NFL as the Green Bay Packers play host to the Detroit Lions. Once again, 6:30 pregame, kickoff around 7:15 right here on Nashville Sports Radio. Going back to the hotline, Adam Sparks, he covers the Commodores for the Tennessee, and he joins us now. All right, so after the way Vanderbilt played against Northern Illinois, and then certainly the way Ole Miss ripped out all hope as far as if you're a fan of Vanderbilt, everybody just assumed that, well, at least with UNLV and East Tennessee State on the schedule, Adam, Vanderbilt can still get three wins, right? I'm going to throw it out there. Based on the way East Tennessee State has played this year and knowing where their losses have been, I mean, here's a team 2-4, but yet they lost to an Appalachian State team, which, oh, by the way, still unbeaten, ranked in the top 25. They beat Austin Peay. They lost by only a touchdown to a Furman team that's ranked now as far as in the top 10 in their particular in the FCS. The point is, there's no givens on this schedule anymore. I would not be shocked now to say Vanderbilt finishes 1-11.
Yeah, I want to go to Johnny. That's going too far. That's exaggeration. That's too much hyperbole. But if Vandy played the way that they did against UNLV, yeah, that's a game. I mean, if Vandy played the way they did against UNLV, Austin Peay, I think, would have beat them. Appalachian State would have beat them by four touchdowns. It had some to do with the opponent, but Vandy would have been blown out by just about any team they played, and certainly an FBS in the country and some FCS on that day, and that's what ETSU is. Yeah, I mean, it's a week earlier, Kalijah Lipscomb said there's a healthy amount of panic, and he was trying to phrase it in the right way to say, panic can be good. He basically was phrasing it as urgency, Well, a few days later, Derek Mason was asked to comment about that, and he said, no, I think that's the wrong approach. Sense of urgency, fine, but you can't have any kind of panic or whatever. I think they do. I think they absolutely need to. And the problem is you're going to need more than a sense of urgency from this point to win any of the SEC games, certainly, because, you know, Kentucky's up and down. South Carolina just beat Georgia. Tennessee's kind of starting to put a little something together, and they still got time before you get there. Missouri is now the new front runner in the SEC East, which they'll play Saturday. There's no given anymore.
And look, the problems, I mean, we go back to Saturday. I mean, here's Vanderbilt scoring 10 points, right? They managed only 3 points, over the last 56-plus minutes of the ball game against UNLV. After jumping out to the 14-0 lead early against Northern Illinois, they struggled the rest of the way against them. But they managed to win the game and hold on in the fourth quarter. I just don't understand. You know, it's one thing to lose to Georgia and LSU. It's another thing to be playing so badly, and especially when you come down to the basics like fundamentals on defense, wrapping up. You know, you don't have to have talent. If you're in front of me, Adam, and I'm getting ready to at least bump into you, I can put my arms around you, right? Just basic fundamentals that they're not doing. What is happening here? I don't get it.
Yeah, it's different problems on different sides of the ball. Offensively, I think the word is limited. You know, you mentioned that they scored early. They've scored early in I think every game except Georgia. They've gotten out to a 7-0 lead or tied it up 7-7 or scored 10 in the first quarter. They've done that pretty much every game. And, you know, offensive coordinators typically have, you know, a 10, 15, 20 play script that they'll start out with, and then they'll adjust things based on what happens there. I tend to think Jerry Godowski, the OC, has a, you know, pretty good script to start games. It's been effective starting off. And then once he runs through those plays, that's kind of it. That tells me that, you know, that Riley Neal and that offense can rehearse something over and over during the week. But then once they have to get to where they have to get up to the ball, read through progressions, try to figure out adjustments, look at what the defense is trying to give or taking away, and they just can't react to it. I mean, Derek Mason said the other day that Riley Neal has the much better arm compared to Deuce Wallace, but he doesn't know where the ball is supposed to go. And that's frightening, and I think that's why they've struggled to score beyond the first couple of drives, because that's when adjustments happen. That's when the defense starts to figure out what you're doing and tries to take it away. And when it's been taken away, Vandy has not had a counterpunch at all. Defensively, he has a lot of fundamentals. It's, you know, I've got a story in Tennessean.com about, you know, where Vandy's older players went. Derek Mason has said the last 3 weeks, the problem with the defense, the missed tackles, the missed assignments, all that, is because they're too young. He mostly means in the secondary, but overall he just means they're inexperienced. Well, I have a story out right now about, well, if they're that young, what happened to the older players? And the answer is they had a lot of guys that were fourth-year seniors that left last year. They graduated last year, and they had redshirted the previous class. So now, instead of going from seniors then to the next class juniors, you've got fourth-year seniors and then redshirt juniors. So you've basically got a gap in classes in terms of inexperience. So your best players now are less experienced than your best players last year, and then you have inexperienced players behind them. And it's showing. These guys have not developed well enough. The best players aren't as good as the best they used to be. The inexperienced players are having to play in spots that they shouldn't. And I don't really see a way out for that defense. I don't see it getting any better. I've seen it get worse, actually.
And here's the thing. Looking at the 2020 schedule for Vanderbilt, they lose LSU from the SEC West, but they gain a road trip to Texas A&M, so that's not good. And all in all, when I look at the four non-conference opponents, I would say next year's four are even going to be tougher than this year's four. They got Mercer, they're at Kansas State, they host Colorado State, and they host Louisiana Tech. I'm thinking that four is certainly much tougher than what Vanderbilt has had to deal with this year with Purdue, Northern Illinois, UNLV, and East Tennessee State.
Well, when you look at next season, the obvious question is Derek Mason the coach or not? And then the if he is, or I guess even if he isn't, you've got to look at personnel and see what they've got coming back. And they could be worse next year than they are now. Now, you know, that's a lot of their issues right now are morale and a lack of confidence, and they're not really put together well. So maybe you could get all those things fixed and be better with the same amount of talent. The problem is I think they'll probably have less talent next year. I mean, you know, defensively, most of their players will be back next year. Almost all of their players will be back next year on defense. So maybe you would hope some of those redshirt juniors, redshirt sophomores, and then a couple of the freshmen that are actually among their top tacklers in the secondary, those guys all come back. Maybe you've got a little something there. I think the defense could certainly be competitive at best next year. But offensively, you're going to lose, what, at least one or two linemen. You'll lose Keyshawn Vaughn. You'll lose Kalijah Lipscomb. You'll lose Jared Pinkney. You'll lose who's right now your starting quarterback, Riley Neal. And that's the biggest issue. You're going to have to figure out who your quarterback is and not have the good skill players that they already have now. They'll be okay at wide receiver next year, but who's going to throw them the ball? I think it's you know, now or never for Deuce Wallace. Riley Neal will be gone next year because he's a grad transfer this year. Deuce Wallace has 1 year left of eligibility. If they give him the starting job, maybe for the second half of the season, that's pretty much his audition of whether or not he can get it next year. But if he's not starting by the end of the season and starting and playing well, you're going to have to go in another direction next year. And I have no idea who that quarterback would be.
All right. Based on everything that we think we know about Derek Mason's contract, after this year, he still has, with the extension that he got, he has, what, 4 years left? How many years would he have remaining after this year?
Well, yeah, he's got either 4 or 5,
right,
I believe, right now, depending on how long that previous extension was. He's gotten 2 extensions in the last 3 years. In 2017, it took him to 5 years. And then over the last 2 seasons, you take that down 2 years and then add whatever his extension was in February. So it's probably at 4 or 5 years. His base salary is $2.9 million. Sometimes you negotiate buyouts down, so they're not necessarily 100% of your base salary. But even if you're starting with a base salary, you're talking about something like $12 to $15 million. So a percentage of that, even if it's half that, you're talking about, you know, $6, $7, $8 million to pay a guy not to coach. That's not what Vanderbilt typically does.
Right.
But this is a new AD. This is an AD that fired Bryce Drew. So maybe we'll see. I think it's a precarious position, too, trying to do fundraising for a stadium project while this is going on.
Well, and think about it, too. You also would have to take care of some of your coaches, too, on your staff. And if you say, okay, you can come back, Derek Mason, but we need changes, whether it's coordinators, assistant coaches, or whatever the case may be, how many folks are going to be like signing up for that job knowing it could be just a 1-year deal anyway, knowing that, you know, if the head coach is per se on the hot seat? My gut tells me they're not going to write the check to buy out Derek Mason. That's at least, but then again, though, if we are talking about they don't win again, or let's just say, you know, they happen to find a way to get by East Tennessee State, which right now I'm not saying is a given based on what we've seen in the last 2-3 weeks. So say 2-10. Is that good enough? You know, I guess time will tell. But my gut tells me, based on the Vanderbilt of the old, that Mason would be back, but there'd be some changes to the coaching staff.
Well, I mean, there's a few moving parts in there. I mean, you know, it only takes one donor to say, I'll buy out that coach, but you got to have that one donor. I mean, sometimes it takes a few, but if somebody wants to do it, they can do it. Yeah, it's far against the grain for Vanderbilt to buy out a coach at all, certainly this early or with this many years left. You know, if they do retain him, you go to the – yeah, I think he would probably at least have a couple position coaches change anyway. But coordinator – you know, Jerry Godowski, this is his first year. It took a steep drop-off. You know, you've got to ask the question, if he had Kyle Shurmur, how much better is his offense? Because that's who Landy Ludwig had. You got to ask yourself, do you try to change the offense and just do something completely out of the box to kind of reboot everything? So that's, you got to make that decision with Godowski. And then with Jason Tarver, you know, Derek Mason in the past has, you know, he fired both of his coordinators his first year. He took over the defense. It got better. I asked him after the game the other day if you considered doing that again, not firing your coordinator, but just taking over play calling duties on defense. And he said no, and he didn't plan on doing it because he doesn't think the scheme is the issue. He thinks players are the issue and their lack of performance and inexperience and missed tackles and all that. And so that leads me to think that he wouldn't change the defensive coordinator in the offseason either. But, yeah, when you come down to it and say you can keep your job if you do X, then he'll have to do X, whatever that is.
See, I've always thrown it out there. Vanderbilt, especially in offense, they have to do something that the other 13 teams in the SEC are not doing. They have to be different. They can't beat the Alabamas and the LSUs by trying to play that brand of football. It's just not going to work. They don't get the same number of talented individuals on their rosters as the other teams that they're going up against in the SEC. But it's just like talking to a stubborn mule. But nobody listens. I don't get it. And they don't. And whoever's in the position of hiring coaches, you know, for me, the next coach, who, if Derek Mason, if he gets fired this year or it doesn't work out, they need to bring in an offensive-minded coach as a head coach who, you know, will hire somebody and just turn the defense over to them. But from an offensive perspective, it has to be different, and it's totally different than anybody else is pulling off in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that could be triple option. That could be, I mean, that would be the obvious one. Service academies, the Georgia Tech method up before this past year. You know, you could do something crazy and go in the pass game and try to just go four wide every play and do some, you know, I mean, a lot of people do a lot of spread stuff now and spread it out. It would be different. It wouldn't be that different now. But yeah, there's some different things you could try with that, but that would have to be based solely on the head coach. You would have to bring in a head coach that said, I'm going to change everything offensively. I don't know that they would take a chance in that way. I don't know if it'd be right or wrong to do it, but I don't feel like they would do that. Although Malcolm Turner just hired Jerry Stackhouse as basketball coach, and you know, that wasn't on the top of my list of who I thought he would hire. So who knows? Maybe he would think outside the box in that side. Right now, I think Derek Mason has to prove that what he's doing will work again to some extent over time. And I think the only way he does that is to win SEC games. If there's a chance for him to dig out of this, you know, you've got to beat a Missouri at home, as hard as that is. You've got to beat a Tennessee if there's still time left, beat a Kentucky. Show that you can be competitive, and maybe he retains his job.
But here's the thing. I mean, the perfect three, and all three of these players represented Vanderbilt at SEC Media Days. When you had coming back this year on offense, the guy that led the SEC last year in yards per carry, you had the top returning tight end in the SEC, had the top leading receiver from last year as far as, you know, catches. I mean, this was the scenario for the offense to shine, and that has been far from the things that we have seen on the field so far.
Yeah, and what's so bad about that is you would think with that those skill sets of those guys that you really wouldn't need that good of quarterback play. You know, you could just have a game manager type guy that just keeps things together. You could have Kyle Shurmur of his sophomore year and you'd win six games with that offense. But that's not what they're getting right now, and like I said before, this year and next year, there's no good answers at quarterback. Riley Neal is what he is, and I don't think he's going to get any better, and I guess he's not going to get much worse. Deuce Wallace, what they did the other day with him just doesn't work. You're going to have to do more RPOs and try to get him out on the perimeter. That being said, I don't think he has the arm to stretch the field like Neal does. Alan Walters, the redshirt freshman, hasn't touched the field yet, and he's not even third on the depth chart. He's fourth, which tells you they don't really have confidence in him as being the quarterback of the future. So there's a lot of questions there, and I think the most frustrating thing, especially at quarterback and offense, is I don't think they have an answer on the roster for the questions that they have.
And we're not going to get any more answers coming up on Saturday with the team that's now leading the East by themselves, Missouri and Kelly Bryant coming to town. Before we let you go, Adam, remind our listeners again all the different ways to keep up with your coverage of Vanderbilt football, basketball, and beyond.
In Tennessee and in print, online, Tennessean.com, and on Twitter, at Adam Sparks.
Adam, thank you as always. Have a great week, and we'll talk down the road.
You too. Good talk to you.
Thank you now. Adam Sparks with the Tennessean. Coming up, we'll wrap up hour number two with this segment being brought to you by friends with Strike and Spare Family Entertainment. Once again, if you're looking for the ideal destination for family fun, I'm talking about a place that combines the best of bowling, games, food, drink, and entertainment. Check out our friends with Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers. And with five centers in Middle Tennessee, there's a location near you. So book your next party or event, birthday parties, family reunions, could be a fundraising event, whatever the case may be. You can go online for more information at strikeandsparebowling.com. Visit their locations, Donaldson Plaza, Murfreesboro, and the Tusculum area, as well as enjoying enhanced fun in Hendersonville and Hermitage, which includes bumper cars, Time Freak, and a laser maze. Hendersonville also with laser tag, roller skating, and an indoor bungee trampoline. All locations are open 7 days a week, including holidays. And remember, there's never a bad time for a good time at Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers.
Well, good afternoon. Still quite a bit of traffic flow now making its way south of town back down through Williamson County. A crash 1200 block of Gallatin Pike in Madison. Spence Lane at Murfreesboro Pike was tied up at that intersection just a few minutes ago on that crash. Still moving, however, on 40 East out past the airport. All that traffic headed back out to Wilson County. Hey, celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest now through October 28. Check it out at obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
Are you looking for the ideal destination for family fun? A place which combines the best of bowling, games, food, drink, and entertainment. Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers is the answer. Experience a great time with family, friends, and co-workers at Strike and Spare Family Entertainment. With five centers in Middle Tennessee, there's a location near you. Book your next party or event, from birthday parties to family reunions. Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers is also great for fundraising events and company parties as well. For more information, go online to strikeandsparebowling.com. Visit their locations in Donaldson Plaza, Murfreesboro, and the Tusculum area, as well as enjoying enhanced fun in Hendersonville and Hermitage, including bumper cars, Time Freak, and a laser maze. Hendersonville also has laser tag, roller skating, and an indoor bungee trampoline. All locations are open 7 days a week, including holidays. And remember, there's never a bad time for a good time at Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers.
What you reading?
It's called The Ledger. There's a great column on the Titans.
So it's a sports publication?
No, not just sports. Like, see here, there's a great cover story on why Middle Tennessee's real estate market is so hot. The Ledger has stories written by some of Nashville's best, most experienced journalists. And you can get all the information on the Mid-State's fast-growing restaurant scene. There's profiles of community leaders and data that helps generate leads for my business.
And sports?
Yes, including UT coverage from Knoxville.
Expensive?
Is free expensive?
Free, huh?
Yeah, grab you one at hundreds of locations and tnledger.com. It's The Ledger. Pick one up today.
Coming up on the George Plaster Show, new Vanderbilt Athletic Director Malcolm Turner has now been on the job around 9 months, and so he's gotten a pretty good feel for what works, what are the problems involving the black and gold, and Tuesday he will join us in studio from 2 to 3 o'clock to discuss all of that. It's an interview you're going to want to hear with Vanderbilt Athletic Director Malcolm Turner here on WNSR Nashville Sports Radio.
Every weekday afternoon, it's the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios. I'd like to invite you to check out our show every Saturday, our Countdown to Kickoff Tailgate Show. We come your way from 10 a.m. to noon every Saturday from Labor Day weekend all the way to December 21st. We'll wrap things up with a special bowl edition of our Countdown to Kickoff Tailgate Show. But every Saturday, we break down the SEC Top 25. The other big games on the college football landscape. We have wonderful interviews and insights as we preview some of the bigger games on the afternoon. And beginning with the second hour, scoreboard updates as well with the 11 o'clock kickoff contest. Big thanks to our sponsors making it possible for us to come your way every Saturday, including the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, Penn Station East Coast Subs, real estate agent Richard Courtney with Frederick and Clark Realty, along with Enns Bank, Strike and Spare Family Entertainment, Casa of Nashville, Klein Preston Law Group, and Lanham's AC Service. That's this Saturday and every Saturday morning during the college football season with our countdown to kickoff tailgate show from 10 a.m. to noon. Don't forget tonight at 6:30 pregame coverage. We kick off just after 7:15. The 4-1 Green Bay Packers at home tonight taking on the Detroit Lions, the team that only has one loss. They're 2-1-1. That tie was to Arizona back in week one. A battle of the QBs tonight. Aaron Rodgers for the Packers going up against Matthew Stafford there with the Detroit Lions. How about the fact that we're talking about two of the most productive quarterbacks in their first 145 starts, fastest, I mean, just under 40,000 yards each. Very impressive. And tonight, I think we'll get a nice display of that. How about the fact, too, Aaron Rodgers riding a four-game winning streak on Monday Night Football. He's 8-7 as a starting QB on Monday night, but he has won four consecutive games. Will tonight be number five? We'll find out a little bit later on tonight right here on Nashville Sports Radio.